Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of August 12th through 19th. This week I'm joined by Father Hans Zollner of the Gregorian University in Rome. Welcome, Father Zollner.
Thank you very much.
We thought we'd bring you in to talk about your work at the Gregorian, specifically your work at the Child Protection Center. Maybe you can talk about what goes on there.
Okay, the Center for Child Protection is an institution that is in connection with the Institute of Psychology of the Gregorian University. It was founded in January 2012 when we were about to organize and to held the symposium on sexual abuse of minors in the Catholic Church that we organized at the Gregorian for bishops from around the world in February 2012. And we said, we don't want to be this symposium, only a public event that can draw attention to what the Catholic Church does about this issue, but we want to have something sustainable that keeps on the work and the message of the symposium that was. We have to give voice to victims. We have to be as aware as possible about abuse that has happened and is about to happen. We have to do all what can be done to do justice and to prevent future abuse. And therefore, with the help of a German state university, the Child Psychiatry Clinic, and the Archdiocese of Munich and many other friends, we have founded the Center for Child Protection that in the next 1 year and a half from now, so altogether 3 years, tries to develop an e-learning program for the prevention of abuse.
Now, I should note that you're a licensed psychologist and psychotherapist, and you're the author of The Church in Pedophilia and Open Wound, A Psychological and Pastoral Approach. You've spoken in the past about what Pope Benedict, now Pope Emeritus Benedict, did on the issue of sexual abuse. Maybe you can share a little bit with our listeners what he did during the time of his papacy.
Now, during the time of his papacy, we have to start a bit earlier.
Earlier, okay.
When he was the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. He came to Rome in 82, and from then on, he more and more got concerned about all the reports that got in from around the world, and especially from the United States, about this sexual abuse of minors committed by priests. That reached a certain level in 92, 93, when he started to investigate more and more into this, and peaked in 2002 when he called on the U.S. American bishops to report to him about those issues. That was about the time when the Boston cases exploded here in the United States. He brought John Paul II to confirm the prefect's choice that responsibility for dealing with those issues was concentrated in the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith and was taken away from the Congregation of Clergy. Obviously, because Cardinal Ratzinger realized that the Congregation for the Clergy and many bishops in the world did not follow the proceedings, the procedures, the laws of the church that were already in place. That was one. He appointed a very able canon lawyer, Monsignor Scicluna, as the head of an office that is called the Promoter of Justice within the Congregation of the Doctrine, and he gave him all the responsibility to deal with those issues. Monsignor Scicluna was in office for 10 years. He dealt with more than 3,000 cases of accusations of priests. That was two. Three, Cardinal Ratzinger was very decided that the canon law and the procedures of the church regarding child abuse and reporting to civil authorities should be strengthened. So in 2001, 2002, there were reforms of those norms and procedures, and this was revised again after the explosion of the cases and scandal in 2010 in Germany. Cardinal Ratzinger and then Pope Benedict, he was finally, he was very clear on dealing with perpetrators. For example, we know that he had already tried what he ever could do in dealing with the case of the founder of the Legionaries, Father Maciel, before he became Pope, and he did what he could to finalize that process as soon as he had become a Pope. So we know that he really stood up to the case in the way that was possible for him. We have also to know that there were many resistances, and there are many resistances in the church to deal with those issues. And he was one who really pushed for the case. When we met him in January 30th this year and handed over to him the proceedings of the symposium that was held last year, he repeated what we had gotten as a message from him in a letter that was signed by Cardinal Bertone as a message to the participants of the symposium. Keep up that work. We have to do what we can in those cases. We have to really acknowledge the church's sins, misdeedings, and the church's ministers' crimes. You may also remember that in 2010 he had written a letter to the Catholics in Ireland, in which he, as the first pope ever, asked pardon from the victims of abuse committed by priests.
So you think when we look back in history, with a little bit of distance perhaps, he'll be seen as one a real reformer on this issue?
I know that this is a very delicate issue in the United States because many people here think that especially Pope Benedict didn't do as much as he could. This is possibly true, but he has started and he has continued with an unwavering fervor in this line. First of all, in acknowledging that the church has a big problem here. Secondly, in trying to do structurally and concerning the laws of the church to do whatever can be done to bring abuses to justice and to prevent future abuse. I think he has done whatever he could. There are many open issues about what in America you call the accountability of bishops, and certainly there is something that can be done and should be done about this. But until now, there are many theological and canonical issues that really make it difficult to talk about and to bring about the change in those accountability issues.
Now, we've spoken a bit about the approach of Rome and the Vatican on this issue. You also look at how different countries deal with the issue of sexual abuse. Maybe you can begin with your own country of Germany, how they've responded to these issues.
Now, the strange thing about clerical sexual abuse of minors is that in every country we have child abuse committed by priests. This is a fact. The level of awareness within the different countries, cultures, societies is quite different. In Germany, I was following the issue from 2002 on quite closely since the US-American bishops had been cited, called by Cardinal Ratzinger to Rome, and we had a little peak of public interest in Germany in the papers in 2002. Now, from 2002 to 2010, when the case exploded in Germany, there was very little attention paid by media. Then, at the end of January 2010, the news went on rolling about priests who had committed sexual abuse of minors. And this was going on for months until the end of June or so. Now, this is a phenomenon that at a certain point, for whatever reason, media take on those issues. The second quite strange and disturbing factor is that the hierarchy doesn't know how to respond in those moments. Concerning Germany, as I said, at the end of January, the news came up, popping up again and again, and the German Bishops' Conference did not reply to this for the next 3 weeks. Within those 3 weeks, there was no official statement from the president of the German Bishops' Conference or other bishops on this issue, and that really created a chaos and a confusion and created the impression that the Catholic Church was just so paralyzed in its hierarchy that there was no way to respond clearly and outspoken and upright. In the wake of this, the German bishops and the major superiors of the religious congregations made their homework, so they have their guidelines there. The Catholic Church, as in many countries, is the only large institution that has done anything substantial about prevention, about even in Germany, it's the only institution that has paid some sort of compensation or whatever you will call this to victims. I was part also of a roundtable of the German government on scientific issues concerning sexual abuse. So we were present there and we stood up to our responsibility. Yet it is difficult to change the whole attitude within a large institution as the Catholic Church is, with all its ramifications in every school, in every kindergarten, in every house for education, whatever kind it may be. To change that policy is quite an issue. Okay, I can say that in Germany, in all dioceses, you have now responsible persons for, let me say, for reporting sexual abuse according to the norms of the church. Concerning cultural issues, I have been in some countries now in the last 3 years since I've gotten into this issue deeper and deeper. I have been to Latin America. I have been recently in Mexico. Before, in April, I was in Chile and in Argentina. In recent months, I was also in Poland and in other countries of Eastern Europe, as well as in Asia. What is important to realize is that the Catholic Church exists in about 180 countries, and the cultural issues about sexuality are so different that it is impossible for the Catholic Church to have one policy that applies to every country, except that there are general rules. One rule would be do justice, give voice to victims. Second rule would be if there is abuse going on, do whatever you can to interrupt that and to report it. Three would be try to do whatever can be done to prevent future abuse. Four, cooperate with civil authorities. But apart from that, I come from Mexico, where you have an expression of emotions and of closeness that is quite different from the US-American type of encountering people. You kiss people when you greet each other. You embrace them, and everything around this kind of building up a relationship is so different from culture to culture. If you go to Asia, you have cultures like South Korea, where it is until now impossible to talk about sexuality in a mature way in open public. All the more it is difficult to talk about sexual abuse. Now, if the Catholic Church in South Korea started to talk about sexual abuse, the whole public would turn against her, the church, and think, or at least discuss this as a single problem of the Catholic Church. Talk about Africa. The Francophone bishops' conferences in Africa are the only ones that haven't handed in guidelines that are requested by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith in a letter signed on 3rd of May of 2011. Now, why is this so? The Francophone African bishops are the only large portion of bishops' conference that haven't handed in anything until now. Probably because until recently they weren't aware of how big the problem is. Maybe not so much the problem of child abuse in Africa, but the abuse of vulnerable people, of women, of married women, and of religious women. All this, plus the political situation, plus, for example, in Africa, wars going on, makes it very difficult to develop one single response from the church in this issue.
Now, it's interesting that you mention, you know, the different cultures and how they deal with one another, and whether, you know, you mentioned in an interview before, the Philippines, for example, there's, like in Mexico, it's much more affectionate. So it would be odd if people didn't touch one another. We had a column by my colleague, Father Jim Martin, recently, where he said that ever since the sexual abuse scandal in this country, he has been very careful about maintaining a certain distance, especially from young people. But he is starting to question that as a result of Pope Francis, because if you see pictures of Pope Francis, he's out there embracing children. There's that famous picture of him lifting up the child, I believe with cerebral palsy, that was so moving. Is there any thing we can learn from Pope Francis on this issue, or maybe we can talk a bit about what steps he's taken since he became Pope?
Now, certainly, as a Latin American, his way to approach people is different, of course. And if you only look into, children all over the world like to be touched and embraced and kissed. This is part of their nature. And being too suspicious about this makes children probably feel very strange about this person. Now, in this country and in Europe and in Germany now, it is almost impossible for a priest to touch a child. All the more it is difficult or impossible to be alone with a child in one place. And this has its reasons. On the other hand, what we have to learn and what we have to teach future priests and all Catholics, including people who work in education, work in volunteer work with youth, is where are the limits of a touch that is sincere and open and not greedy and not demanding more than this what a real mature relationship would convey. Now, this is very difficult, because if you have people who are psychologically so much limited or so much driven to receive affection and to feel that affection, that they reach out and embrace and kiss kids or youth so that they get their portion of affection and maybe even sexual gratification, that obviously has to stop. But how can you teach and how can you draw the fine line between this? Pope Francis's approach is quite different, and people and even media realize that he is so open and he is so free, and he can give in his kiss. He does not receive, he does not gratify his own needs, but he receives affection that he is not looking for. And this is a sign of freedom, and this is what people obviously realize in him as authentic and sincere. When he speaks about tenderness, and he speaks quite often about this, the tender approach to people, he certainly communicates something about what I myself have seen a week ago when I was in the Basilica of Guadalupe. And during communion, I was distributing communion, and people were coming up and not only requesting the communion and receiving it, but also requesting a blessing. And a blessing, you in Mexico, you can't give only by the hand of by the sign of hands. You have to touch them, and they request this, that you put your hand on their heads and then you bless. So there is much about the culture of touch, as Cardinal Tagle from Manila said in his talk at the symposium in 2012 at the Gregorian, that is something in those countries and cultures that is so that makes is part of that culture, that it is impossible to eradicate this. Now, how this can be implemented, or how this can be something much more normal in other cultures like ours, the US American or the German culture, is quite an issue, because where you have more restrictions, certainly people are also prone to overstep limits and boundaries. And there, in the education of seminarians, of religious and of lay people, you have to talk about this. Where are the boundaries, and what do you do if you find yourself somehow overstepping this? What can you do to stop yourself and to do something so that you can be helped by professionals and by people who accompany you, so that you don't get into the danger to abuse others.
Now, finally, maybe we can speak a bit about any kind of steps that Pope Francis has taken. Is he continuing sort of the policies of Benedict on sex abuse? Are there any new initiatives that he has planned that you know of?
Now, in the last 4 months since he has taken office, we have had three encounters that have also made news by Pope Francis. One was when he met for the first time officially the head of the Congregation of the Doctrine, Archbishop Müller. He said, the Pope said, that we have to continue the fight against abuse and we have to do justice to victims. About a month later, in April, he met an organization, an Italian organization, that since many years works for victims of abuse and works for prevention. And in an Angelus on a Sunday at the beginning of April, he mentioned this organization and he talked about the church's failures and what the church can do in the future to better herself. And finally, on 4th of June this year, Pope Francis met us, met my assistant, met another Jesuit from Poland who works in Poland with us for the prevention, myself, after a mass in Santa Marta, where we presented our project, the Center for Child Protection of the Gregorian, to him, and he was listening very attentively, and he said three times and very vigorously, keep on, andate avanti. So keep on, we have to do whatever we can to prevent future abuse, and we have to do all what is in our forces to promote this also outside the church, because as we see nowadays, the church has, in some parts of the world, this may sound strange to Americans, but has a leadership in child protection and in doing whatever they can in those countries like India or in some African countries, that the church rights are not only written on paper, but also put into practice.
Well, again, we want to thank Father Zollner from the Gregorian University, the author of The Church in Pedophilia and Open Wound, and is also instrumental in this e-learning curriculum for church practitioners on best practices for preventing abuse. People want to learn more about that, they can go to the Gregorian website.
They can go to our website, www.elearning-childprotection.com.
Okay, and we will put that link up too for our listeners. But we want to thank you again for helping us to understand this difficult issue.
Thank you very much.